Welcome to the Pesky Report, a podcast for Red Sox fans.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 163 of the Pesky Report. My name is Brandon Brewer. I'm joined here tonight by all the boys. I got Ed Hand, Hogdale, and making his Pesky Report debut, Mr. Huitzo, all the way from Mexico. What's going on, my guys? How you guys doing?
Hanging in there, yeah.
You know, I heard that there was a Red Sox game on today, but I had a lot of softball going on, so I couldn't really watch it. And, you know, I actually went to the cages this week to work on my swing because I've been pulling everything. It's just been weak contact. When I do hit it well, it goes foul. And I figured out, actually, that I was standing too close to the plate. I was just totally smothering the plate. So anytime I tried to go opposite field, I just hit a weak fly ball to the left fielder. And anytime I try to hit it hard, I would just foul it a million feet foul. So today, I stood a little bit further away. I got a couple opposite field singles, and I hit a ground rule double, which I have never done before. So that was pretty cool. I'm not a big power hitter, so it was pretty cool seeing a ball go over the left fielder's head, especially because I've kind of sucked this year.
That was my day. Center field for the Red Sox.
Yeah, well, no
did
kidding.
Something happen? Did something happen today with oh god, what's his name? Buffett Sandberg. You know who I'm talking about.
Jaron Duran. Yes, he had another one of the moments where he couldn't find the ball. It bounced right beside of him.
Oh, Jaron. Oh, my sweet. Right. I yeah, he's not a starting center fielder, is he? He probably shouldn't be playing center at this point, period, but
He's the guy that should be. He's the guy that should be on the bench, waiting for the moment that you're down. You know, maybe three games in the American League Championship Series, and you pinch run him to go in and steal a bag. That should be his role.
He's fast. He might even be a faster runner than Dave Roberts, but he doesn't have that instinct. He gets thrown out stealing a lot more. His timing's still seems like it's a little bit off. And then, you know, when you look at what his issue's been, it seems like it's a focus problem. I wonder if during the off season they can get him set up with like a sports psychologist or something to kind of get his head more in the game.
Well, maybe they need to get him to work with Ed Hand and hit the batting cages and figure out what's going on all around as a ball player. So
yes, my slow pitch softball expertise will really help him there. Yeah, see, Jaron, you're actually just standing too close to the plate.
Yeah, well, they didn't see that before. But, man, like, Duran's just a nightmare out there in center, dude. Like, we're just subjected to see this guy start every day. And he was jawing at some of the Royals fans because apparently they threw bottle caps at him, which is quite funny.
It's like, just weird to think about Midwesterners being like jawing with a player. Like the East Coast, I expect that, but it's like, it's kind of like, are you that sensitive? Like, what's the worst like a Kansas City person's going to say to you, Jaron? Come on.
Genuinely.
Like Hogdale said, apparently they were throwing stuff at him, and that's what really kind of got Bottle under caps. His skin. Ooh. Yeah. I mean, still, if you're sitting there trying to play a game and you're getting pegged in the back of the head by anything, you're going to get a little agitated by it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, this dude's mentality is not built for Boston. It's really not.
That's probably true.
Like, this dude gets rattled so easily. Like, that quote the other week, like, really annoyed me where it's, you know, if you're doubting us, then don't root for us later on. Like, it's, first of all, it's us, dude. You've been here for like a fucking cup of coffee. Like, and it's us. Okay, sure. And you just aren't good enough to be saying this. Like, you really, really are not. Like, he gets rattled so unbelievably easily. It's just not a good fit.
So here's the thing, Hogdale. You're right. You're objectively right. He is not good enough to be saying that. However, have you been on Red Sox Twitter the last 2 weeks? I don't think those people deserve a winning team. I'm
Believe me, dude. Fucking, I hate Red Sox Twitter as much as the next guy. I spend half my time on this goddamn podcast saying how fucking horrific it is. It stinks. And Twitter in general is just a cesspool. Like, if you spend 90% of your time on Twitter, you need help, which is why I also need help, because I can't get enough of this actual self-sustaining shithole. I can't. I'm addicted to it.
It's like a train crash. You can't look away.
It is. Yeah. Twitter's the worst.
It's a train crash that you're also participating in.
Yes.
But that being said, Twitter is still better than Facebook.
True.
The Facebook, Red Sox Facebook, is a million times worse than Twitter.
Well, because at least on Twitter, like once every 25 tweets, you'll see something that's actually like someone with a brain typed it out. On Facebook, it just doesn't exist. It's nothing but people like stuck in their own delusions.
It's actually funny that we're mentioning this right now, because part of why Wheatso's here is because we're going to be, in a few months from now, we're going to be trying to get some interviews with some of the Spanish speaking players. And I, a couple weeks ago, sent out a general message on Twitter being like, hey, anybody bilingual want to be on the podcast? And I had actually, because I've had interactions with Wheatso for probably a year now, something like that. And I thought, I'm not even kidding. Like, my initial thought when you, because we were talking about the WBC a few weeks ago, and you mentioned that you were Team Mexico. And I was like, oh shit, I wonder if he'd have any interest in doing that. So I was actually going to send you a DM and not do that. But then I was like, oh, I don't want to impose. I don't want to be presumptuous or anything. So I send the message, and literally 3 minutes later, I get a DM from the guy, and I was just so relieved by that, because some of the other inquiries I was getting were a little bit like, oh boy, thanks, but no thanks, the spot's taken. So I'm happy to have you here. Definitely one of the better Twitter posters I've seen in a while.
Thank you.
Yeah, somebody that I generally just enjoy your content, so very happy to have you on board.
Yeah, I mostly tweet about movies, because I am a film major and I somewhat of a film director, very independent stuff, but I think I tweet a lot about movies, but I tweet a lot about Boston in the mentions of other accounts about Boston.
So, question for you, Wheatso.
Okay.
How did you become a fan of the Boston Red Sox?
Well, my dad was a Dodgers fan because of Fernando Valenzuela and all of that. And when the 2004 ALCS came, my dad hates the Yankees, so he really wanted Boston to finally kick the Yankees out of the World Series. So I remember I was a kid, but I remember that. I remember his excitement when they came back for being down 3-0. And then I just kind of started to pay attention to them. Right about that time was when the Patriots started to win a lot. I basically decided, okay, Boston is my city from American sports. So yeah, and I think I became really, really obsessed with the Red Sox around 2013, especially when I saw, I remember, we don't get a lot of televised games, but the playoffs, they televised them. And I remember I saw Papi's Grand Slam after then I was hooked. So
that's awesome, man. That's really cool. You know, you mentioned you don't get a lot of televised games. Do you have access to MLB TV so that you can watch any of the NESN broadcasts or anything like that?
Yeah, now I do.
Good.
Since around 2017, I have it and I try to not miss games.
That's awesome. It's cool that, you know, being that you're in Mexico, I had no clue that, you know, what would go on, how you guys would even get to consume that kind of content down there. But that's awesome. I'm glad to have you on board. Glad to have you on here. And I'm stoked to get to see what kind of guests we can bring in that will be able to funnel out into a Spanish speaking market. That's, you know, relatively untapped market for us.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be very interesting, very cool.
That there are a lot of players, especially, Ed, you can back this up, guys that are down in the minor leagues that are Spanish-speaking players that don't really speak English all that well, and this would be a good chance for them to get the word out to their fans from their countries where they grew up and where they have a solid following.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to expand what we know about these players and how we can connect them with their audience, like you said.
Yeah, I like it. So, you know, let's get into a little bit of what has taken place this week. And, you know, we've obviously trade deadline came and went. Jackie Bradley Jr. is no longer a member of the Boston Red Sox. He was DFA'd. So I believe it was Ed that tweeted out earlier, it's nice to finally see that his defensive skills are being recognized now that he's no longer on the team. And it's funny because half the people that are saying, like, we need JBJ are the same ones last week that were saying we need to get rid of JBJ. So, again, going back to the Twitter being a cesspool, that's the kind of content that is out there. But Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, wish him the best. Hope he finds a landing spot somewhere. Good guy, but just not cutting it. And then, of course, the Red Sox were able to take 2 out of 3 against the Houston Astros, who are arguably the best team in Major League Baseball. So the going into this Royals series, we had to feel pretty good. And then the Royal Series happened.
Yeah, the Red Sox, they did their part, got completely owned by a tandem of MJ Melendez and Kyle Isbell. You know,
who?
True juggernauts of the game. So really, we should have expected this.
It sounds like players that you would expect to see on your old Nintendo Classic Little League Baseball World Series.
I'll say this. I'll say this about Melendez. He did hit 41 home runs in the minors last year, and I don't know what he's doing playing the outfield. He came up a catcher, I think. I mean, Salvador Perez is there. But watching him play the outfield, I was having some Christian Arroyo and Wright flashbacks.
They were actually talking about that on the broadcast today, how he has he is a catcher by trade, but he's learned the outfield as a way to get promoted and come up to the bigs a lot quicker. So kudos to him. You said he hit 41 home runs in the minors. He almost did that against the Red Sox this weekend.
It was pathetic. It was such a pathetic performance. I mean, dude, you lost 3 of 4 to a team that is genuinely trying to lose games. Like, this is a team that wants to lose. Like, they're one of the worst teams in baseball, in one of the worst divisions in baseball. Fucking yikes, dude. Holy shit.
that walk-off last night. I said it in our Twitter group. I was like, who didn't see this one coming? Like, that's the way this season has gone.
Eighth walk-off loss of the season for the Red Sox. Most in Major League Baseball.
And can most I tell for you? The Red Sox since 2015.
Oh, man. Can I tell you, though, what I kind of didn't mind about that, though? I now feel 100% certain that I want Garrett Whitlock in the rotation next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Garrett Whitlock.
And the comparison that I made for this, I'm going to drop some nerd shit on you guys. You ever watch Dragon Ball Z?
Fuck yeah, of course I did.
You know Piccolo's special beam cannon that uses to kill Goku and Raditz, and then we never see him use it again? There's a reason why he never uses it again. He has to charge up for like 10 fucking minutes beforehand, and it's awesome when he actually gets it out, but then he needs to recharge it again. And that's kind of what Garrett Whitlock is for this bullpen. because you can't really use him that much. So what's the point in having the guy if you could use him once every 3 days to go two or three innings? I just don't think it's worth it when you could just have him in a normal rotation spot and have him pitch. It's either turn him to a one-inning reliever that can maybe go two innings like John Schreiber, or put him in the rotation. It doesn't help. It honestly handicaps the pen, if anything, because you're losing one of your better reliever options by having him do that. You know, you have to depend on Hauk and Schreiber that much more.
Yeah, and man, a full offseason is going to benefit Whitlock's transition into a full-time rotation piece so much. I mean, obviously, a lot of what stalled in this year was the lockout shortened offseason. And can I just say, Jaron Duran, take notes from like how Garrett Whitlock actually like, you know, takes accountability like after like a rough pitch, because like Whitlock looked good tonight. And it was one bad pitch that doomed him. And after the game, he said, "I'm frustrated with myself. I made one dog shit pitch and he took advantage of it. I need to be better." I'm like, dude, this is my guy. This is a guy who can handle the criticism. This is a dude who's built for fucking playing for the Boston Red Sox. I love Garrett Whitlock.
Yeah, I agree with it. I think it's a waste of Whitlock's talents to have him in the bullpen, especially if he can't pitch every day or every two games. I think then what's the point? You can stretch him out. He has the stuff to be a pretty good starter, so why not? Why keep him in the bullpen?
Yeah, I think the problem with forcing him into the starting role this season was that they started the season with him in the bullpen and then tried to force him into being a starter after Hauk had his troubles and then couldn't get into Canada. And then they were like, okay, well, Whitlock, you're in. And yeah. It's really just been, you know, a downhill season. You know, we started off so poor. We had one little glimmer of a good month. And then other than that, it's been injuries. It's been guys not being vaccinated, so can't travel with the team to Canada. Guys getting shuffled around in lineups. And it's just been a cluster all year. And it clearly has not worked out at all.
Yeah. I mean, this series was so frustrating on so many levels, too. And there were just some, like, weird... And, you know, I usually like Cora a lot. He's my guy. And, you know, no one's going to be perfect ever. But there were just... Even, like, it was, just for instance, it was very weird to me that Hosmer was benched for the game yesterday, even though you still had Verdugo in the lineup. So clearly, you're comfortable playing lefties against Lynch. I just don't know why you're taking him out this quickly for Dalbec there, even though Dalbec did admittedly have a good game. It just was a strange move this early since they got him in Kansas City, where the fans are obviously going to be loving the guy. And, you know, he was really like soaking Matt all in. It just seemed that was a strange decision for me. And I know the lefty on lefty thing, and I know Bobby did well, but it was a strange move. Same with starting.
And also Hosmer is batting well against lefties. So there was really no need to sit him. That and some of the bullpen moves he's been making, Alex Cora, I think has been weird. I don't know why Whitlock didn't pitch in, I believe it was the second game of the series.
Yeah.
Or the first one. I don't remember.
The first Darwinson game where he just got lit up. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing to bring up, honestly, because did anybody expect to see Hernandez come in a tie game in the seventh inning there?
This is like earlier in the year. No, go ahead, Ed.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, my thought it was supposed to be a confidence booster because it was like, oh, well, we didn't pick up a reliever, but we have Hernandez coming up. He's looked good in the minors, and it just was putting him in the wrong situation at the wrong time. And honestly, like, I didn't see the game today, but looking at the stat line, it looked like things didn't go much better today for him.
No, it was terrible. No. He had, I think, four walks in the inning today. Not a good look. Going back to Verdugo playing, I think a lot of that just had to do with the fact that there are not many outfielders available for this team. You've got Duran, who bats left. Verdugo, lefty. And then you've got Tommy Pham, and Jalen Davis. Those are your only outfielders that are not on the IL. You got JD Martinez, who can play the outfield sort of, but I mean, maybe he's better than Duran at this point. Who knows? But
I mean, Davis is like, I know he's like the fifth outfielder, and he's going to be the first guy down once Ref Snyder comes back or whoever.
Right.
He hasn't looked bad, though. You know, he's made some good defensive plays. He's hitting, you know, incredibly small sample size, but it's not like he's not hitting. He can clearly play center field, so you put him in center. Maybe you can put JD in left and Pham in right or something. I don't know how that's going to go, but Pham seems athletic enough that he should be able to move. I don't. And again, I can't complain about the move. It worked. Bobby hit a home run. Doogie hit a home run. So it's not like these moves backfired. It just seemed kind of weird to me to go into the game like that.
I just think it was down to the, like, hey, this is all we have left kind of decision instead of a left on left matchup decision. I think it was like, this is the best we got.
I like that nobody's like put Arroyo in right anymore.
Oh God. Yeah, like, dude. No,
but
that's a war crime.
Hogdale made the point, you know, like he only got the ball lost in the sky once. Duran's done this multiple times now. So,
and Duran's supposedly a natural center fielder, and Arroyo, that's like right field's what, his third position, third or fourth position.
It's weird, Duran, because he was drafted a second baseman who like was supposed to learn. You know, he's learned outfield, but his speed's really overcompensated for the fact that he gets terrible reads.
Well, he has no instincts.
Terrible reads,
no
terrible jumps
whatsoever.
Like that was always the thing about Jackie Bradley Jr. And I know it's not fair to compare the two because JBJ is elite at center field, but the routes that he would take to balls were always the best route. Like there was no deviation from it. He knew exactly which way to go. Duran looks like he gets lost. Like he'll take three steps in for a ball over his head.
When a ball gets hit in the air, Duran has no fucking clue where that thing is going. No clue.
You know, I went to a couple of Blue Sox games this week, and you know who's playing center field? Franchi.
Of course he was. And he's hitting tanks. I saw him hit that one over the scoreboard.
The hatred that Red Sox fans seem to have for Franchi for not doing well in the big leagues just makes me love him and root for him that much more. Like I'm like the Grinch when people are hating on Franchi. My heart just grows three times bigger. I actually saw Abraham Almonte play center there too. And for a guy that came in with like zero fanfare, he's a fun player. He's like a 33-year-old journeyman, but he's like having the outfield do celebrations when they win now. You know, just like he's doing everything. He's just running. He's doing a lot of like base stealing, a lot of running. Seems like a popular guy. It was also kind of funny because I was in line to get my ticket for the game because I still have to pay for my tickets despite my RTS bullshit job. And somebody, the guy next to me, who is like this very cross, like professional looking guy, is just like, I'm a player's agent. Yes, Almonte. Yes, and I was like, "Oh, it's Abraham Almonte's agent. What's he doing here?" So I don't know. I don't know if like that's a regular thing for players that their agents just go to the games. But it was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. It sounds like he's a good clubhouse guy, which will be good for the Woo Sox to have that veteran presence, that veteran leadership down there. That's good. Ed, you wanted to talk a little bit about some of these Woo Sox players that have been standing out, right?
Oh yeah, especially because. I don't know how fun it would be to talk about the Red Sox right now.
We're pretty much done with that.
It wasn't specifically about like any Woo Sox players in general. It was just that they had the first ever Worcester no-hitter the other day. It was Michael Wacha threw the first 4 2/3, and then A.J. Pelini came in, and then Chase Shugart came in, and yeah, they had a no-hitter against the Durham Bulls, who I think the day before beat them 16-0. So that was pretty cool.
Durham Bulls are a first-place team as well. So that's pretty notable when you can no-hit a quality team like that.
Oh, yeah, and they beat the hell out of a lot of, like, decent pitchers. They have a lot of guys on rehab there, but Luis Patino, who was one of the guys who came over in the Blake Snell trade, he's been in the big leagues before, decent prospect, they beat the crap out of him. He didn't even make it through the first inning. They beat up on, I think his name is Taj Bradley. He's their top prospect. They beat Chris Murphy actually beat, like, outpitched him. They beat up on them. Friend of the show, Cole Cottom, I actually got to go to his debut at AAA, and he was really nervous the first time up and struck out on a bunch of hittable pitches. But the second time up, he smoked a double over the center fielder's head.
Attaboy. And, you know, attaboy, yeah, Cole.
He just missed a second double also because he went opposite field, and it just died at the warning track. He just missed like a wall ball double there, which would have been pretty cool. But yeah, he seemed like he belonged, caught a good game. Yeah, no, there's talent there. The system's a lot better, I think, than people probably even realize, because they have, I'd say the top six in the system right now are all future major, have a good shot at being major leaguers. I don't know how, but so, I mean, there's the guys that everybody's heard of, right? The Marcelo Mayer, who I suspect is going to be in Greenville very soon. Tristan Casas is healthy again. He had two doubles today. Bayo is the number three guy right now. He, you know, has had some issues at the big league level, but I think a lot of it's been bad luck and bad defense.
Oh yeah. His stuff is clearly there. Like, his stuff clearly plays. But he's getting to death.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I watch him, and it's just like, wow, this guy's stuff is a lot better than Eddie Rodriguez's. And Rodriguez was the last pitching prospect I remember coming up that I was like, oh, this guy's good. And he is. He's a solid middle of the rotation guy when he's there. But Bayo's stuff is just different. It just moves different. It looks heavy. And that's why you see so many ground balls. And he seems like a kid that really cares about it, really, really focused. And a little bit emotional, which honestly, not a bad thing if you're a pitcher to be able to draw on that. We like see like guys get all hyped up. So those are the big three. But then there's Nick York and there's Sadon Rafaela. And I was really excited to see that a guy's kind of sneaking under the radar a little bit on Sox Prospects. We did our update yesterday. And, they put Miguel Blaze at number five on the whole list. And the rumors that I've been hearing about his, like, what's it called, like Statmaster or something like that, like the stuff that they use for like bat speed and all that, apparently it's been absolutely off the charts. And yeah, the comparisons he's getting, they're giving him an eight. Like, I don't know. Are you guys familiar with like the 2-8 system for baseball, like how they rate prospects and players?
Yeah.
Maybe you should give an explanation.
Explain just it.
Basically, a two. So if you go from 2-8 for each thing, right? Mm-hmm. A two is like the floor. It's like your best case scenario. We'd be ones. So first of all, we'd be ones. So we're not even at two.
I don't know. I've heard some of your softball stories. It sounds like you're a solid 1.5.
Maybe a 1.25. I don't.
Fair.
I don't.
Fair.
You know, I would. Okay. I wouldn't go that high. But like a two is like the lowest you're gonna get. You're probably not gonna escape Salem, like the lowest level. And an eight, you're Mike Trout. And Blaze, at least for Sox prospects, and this is the first time I've actually seen this, he has an 8 ceiling. Okay. Usually, these like really good prospects, they have 7 ceilings, because a 7's like an all-star, you know? That's like Xander Bogaerts is a 7. A 6, I'd have to, hang on, let me get this up on the screen so I can actually have like an explanation for you guys, because it is very interesting, like the way that they rate this stuff. Let's see here.
So replaced it. Like, when did the Sox draft him? Is this a Haim guy?
Yeah, he was somebody who was signed as an international free agent. Okay, here it is. So an 8 is a franchise player, so that's like Mike Trout or Jake DeGrom. A 7 is a regular all-star or a number 1 or number 2 starter. So for an 8 for a pitcher would be like an elite ace. This is like a number 1 or a number 2. So this is like Xander Bogaerts or I don't know who's a good ace. Maybe like Logan Webb on the Giants. Then a 6 is somebody who that's an impact everyday player, occasional all-star, or an elite closer. So that's going to be like an Alex Verdugo, a Nathan Eovaldi, a Josh Hader. So the WAR for these guys. So for the top guys, the WAR is like a 7+. For the next group, it's a 5-7. And then for the 6, it's a 3-5. Then you've got you know, like a five is like an average regular, or a 3, 4, or 5 starter, that's like a Christian Vasquez, Nick Pivetta, or like a decent setup guy. And then it kind of goes down, like a bench player would be a 4.5, an emergency up and down guy's a 4, so on and so forth. But yeah, Blaze's ceiling is an 8, which is, you just don't see it very often.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to keep my eye on him, because that's quite exciting.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing a good job in the FCL. It's just a matter of time until he's in Salem, and then things get really interesting. And, you know, the college players are finally starting to get into games, the guys that they just drafted. Sorry, they're not really college players. They're mostly high schoolers.
Yeah.
I was going to say Blaze Jordan, looking at it, he's 19. So somebody to really be excited about. If he's a 19-year-old and he's already getting that type of praise and credit to him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is 18 years old. He plays center field, and he was signed for $1.5 million in January 2021.
Dude, it is criminal. Like how little you could pay these international free agents. Like, genuinely.
Yeah.
He was born in 2002, guys.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah, I've seen that.
God, I'm old. Oh, shit.
Cocktail, you're like 22.
Scott, I am.
You're making me.
I feel ancient right now.
Yeah, how do you think I feel? I'm 32.
You just must be like a decaying skeleton by this point.
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
So he was born in 02. I graduated high school in 03.
Like, dude, he's younger than my younger brother. What the fuck?
It's wild.
But he's probably better at baseball than him, too. No offense.
Little
yeah, little. At least by a little.
So you mentioned in your explanation guys like Tristan Cassis, who would be a 7 on that board.
Yeah, that's his ceiling.
His ceiling is a 7.
Yeah, 4 is a 4, ceiling is a 7. So a 4 is an average every day.
Right now, Tristan Cassis down at the AAA level with the Woo Sox. When do we see him called up? And
oh, that's a good question. Before the trade deadline, I would have said August 19th is probably when it happens, because that's when he's still eligible for Rookie of the Year next year and service time manipulation, etc. But now that they have Hosmer, I think he'll get a cup of coffee in September, because there's no way he doesn't get added to the 40 man at some point. And I don't see why they wouldn't want to give him a taste of the majors. But they don't have to rush him now, which is good. I think that's a really good thing.
So you still think that we see him by the end of the season, though?
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he had, like, the last week or two, especially if the team's out of the race at that point. You know, it's like, what's to lose? His defense is major league ready. He still sucks against left-handed pitchers. But, you know, I'll say this too. Watching him play the last few days this week, everything that guy hits is hard contact. Even if it's a foul ball, it's like an absolute laser beam. The problem is making contact. So especially against lefties, he's really struggled with that. But if he can just bring that a little bit more, I think that he's going to be a really I think that he's going to be an all-star at some point, just watching his approach and watching the way that he makes contact.
You said August 19th is the date that he would be able to come up and then still be eligible for Rookie of the Year next year. Yeah. I think with the addition of Eric Hosmer onto this team, you definitely bring him up sooner rather than later. Who better to learn the ropes of being a major league first baseman than from a guy who's a multiple time gold glove, an all-star at the position, a World Series champ at that position? Why not? Also a fellow lefty, so they can discuss hitting strategies against MLB pitchers. Take full advantage of the fact that you have Eric Hosmer for free right now.
Yeah, I think they went to the same high school also.
They did.
Yeah, I read somewhere when they trade for him that he's like a mentor to Casa. So I agree with Brandon. I think if you have Hosmer, I think it's a good reason to bring Casas as soon as you can. But I also see what you mean about, you know, the extra time he might need before making the jump.
Yeah, the only problem with that is then you have a platoon of two lefty first basemen, and that's yeah. not ideal.
Yeah. Although if JD Martinez walks, then you just use one of them at DH, one of them at first base, and then you have Bobby Dalbec kind of rotate. Bobby's in such a weird spot right now, but it seems like the more first basemen that are on the team, the better he hits. So maybe that'll give him some motivation.
That was the case last year.
It's been the case this year. You see that home run he hit the other day?
Yeah, he crushed it.
Bobby's starting peak second half Bobby, where he's just temporarily going to be a god for like the next, you know, 40 or 50 games, which is going to make everything a lot harder. You know, maybe up the trade value, hopefully. I don't know.
Hopefully that's what it does, is it ups the trade value.
If like, it's like,
so crowded.
Remember how Jackie like was hitting really well at Fenway and just couldn't do anything on the road? Maybe they should have a platoon with Bobby where he only plays during August.
Yeah. Genius.
I don't know. I don't know how to figure that guy out. He is hot right now, though, so just ride the hot bat until he cools off, which you know he inevitably will do. And then when he cools off, he definitely is ice cold. Looking ahead, we do have pretty rough go of things coming up. The defending World Series champ Atlanta Braves are up next for these Boston Red Sox after a day off. Anything at all to be positive about going into these games?
I think cocktails drink all the bleach in the state of Iowa, so at least like people will be safe.
True, I've had to start importing from out of state because I've drank the entire state dry.
Dude, with all the supply chain issues, you're gonna have to wait at least 2 weeks to get more bleach.
I know, dude. I don't know how I'm gonna fucking get through it. It's a rough deal. And here's the thing: the Red Sox took 2 out of 3 from the Astros, like literally a series ago. It's like it's just maddening because you really don't know like what to expect. Really inconsistent. Like this is the bane of just having so many injuries and so many starters out. Like, how much better would this team look if Kike was back and Story was back? Like, they need both of them so desperately. Because there's just too many non-major leaguers playing on the team right now. Like, you're fielding half a minor league team out there, and it just isn't good enough.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you for a silver lining question here then, Hogdiff. Who's been your favorite of, I guess, the unheralded guys that have come in throughout this injury period? Who do you think has, like, stepped up the most?
Man, I really was impressed by Rob Refsnyder. Oh, go ahead, Brandon.
Tommy Pham.
Yeah!
I mean, I love Pham, but he's not been really... Here for 2 days. He's a trade move.
He has yet to piss me off, so I'm all
in. Same. He hustles. Love that guy. But I've been really impressed by Rob Refsnyder, which fucking grades me that he got hurt too. Like, he was really good out in the field. He was good enough with the bat to justify being in the lineup every day for when he was in there. And I'll be excited to see him when he gets back, you know, whenever the hell that may be.
Yeah, I agree. I think Refsnyder was having a tremendous season. And the fact that he was killing the Yankees was, you know, just icing on the cake. And Jeter Downs, for what it's worth, wasn't great, but he wasn't terrible. I think he played pretty decent ball, especially against the Yankees, which is always fun to see. And that was kind of cool to get to see him get the call up at some point this year too.
And he's better than Yolmer Sanchez, so why is he not playing?
He's back in AAA right now, so that would be the reason. What about you, Weetzo?
I say I know he didn't pitch well today, but Cutter Crawford, I think he carried the rotation for almost a month. So yeah, today wasn't his day, but he has been solid, and I think he has a very good future, like for guy of the rotation, maybe 4-5.
Yeah, It's interesting between him and Winkowski and Bea where they're going to wind up going into next year. Because I could see Crawford being effective in that number four, number five spot. Or I could see him being effective as a setup guy, especially now that his confidence seems to be a little bit stronger. I think he does have an injury history in the minors, and his so it makes me wonder, like, what's going to keep him pitching the longest, I guess. But, you know, you slot him in that four or five spot next year, I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Winkowski. I think he's been pretty good, too, coming up from minors. His first call-up against Baltimore, I believe, was not good. But then after that, he got sent back down, readjusted, came up. Didn't he have, like, a no-hitter or a shutout for a big portion of a game?
Yeah, he has, like seven innings guts.
Or something. Yeah.
And even when he pitches bad, I think he always looks so cold, so composed. And I really think that's a good thing to have, because especially when I saw him pitch against the Yankees, they were crushing him and he was stone cold. And you don't see that a lot from major leaguers. So, yeah, I was impressed by that.
I think one thing about the Red Sox this whole year that we can take a positive from is that the pitching depth is much better than we had assumed, because like the Red Sox have sustained like so many injuries to the starting rotation, and it really hasn't completely sunk them. Like, it's mostly been like the lineup disappointing that's kept them out of a lot of these games, as opposed to the starting pitching. Either the lineup or back end of the bullpen has been like the two, you know, yikes things this year. But I like the depth going forward. And, man, this next offseason is going to be so pivotal for the future of the Red Sox. It's going to be – a lot of big decisions need to be made.
Yeah, it's going to be one way or the other. It's going to be a really different-looking team in 2023 compared to this one and last year's also. One thing before we move on from it with Winkowski, I actually think that he has a because right now I think the problem with him as a starter is that there just isn't a lot of swing and miss with his stuff. He pitches to contact, and sometimes that's good, and sometimes you get kind of clobbered. But I think if he were to – I know in the Arizona Fall League last year, he was reaching back and hitting 99 on his fastball out of the bullpen. He's somebody that I could see being successful if they were to move him into a relief role.
Yeah,
100%.
Interesting.
Also, shout out, because Winkowski made me think of this, you know, because Andrew Benintendi trade. Shout out to Red Sox double agent Andrew Benintendi, helping to sink the Yankees. We appreciate
following the steps of Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, he's channeling it. His inner Jacoby Ellsbury. Love it.
Love to see that. Yeah.
All of these handsome ex-Red Sox that go to the Yankees end up being double agents, except Johnny Damon.
My anti-vax king, Andrew Benintendi. I love him.
I liked it with the Whit Merrifield trade was my favorite. Because he was the one. So, in case you missed this, Whit Merrifield, second baseman / outfielder of the Kansas City Royals, was one of the 10 Royals that did not get vaccinated and couldn't travel to Toronto. And when asked about it, he said, and I might be paraphrasing here, but I'm not off by that much. He said, I would get vaccinated if it was for a good team.
Yes.
So, yeah. He literally said, dude, you are not good enough for me to get vaccinated. I don't give a fuck. Like,
at the deadline, he gets traded to Toronto.
Yeah.
And immediately gets vaccinated.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Quality move right there.
Shows how bad the leadership down there is in Kansas City. And that was speculated as like a thing, like why so many Royals players didn't give vaccines from, you know, a complete lack of any sort of leadership or accountability. And yeah, that kind of shows it. Like the dude's like, oh, well, you know, if we were a good team, I would have gotten vaccinated.
You see.
Oh my God.
Just to update listeners on the current state of the New York Yankees, they have lost 5 in a row. And
we love it.
Yeah.
I believe they're under 500 since the trade deadline, which makes me very happy. And the Astros are one game back of them for the best record in the American League. So much for your generational season, Yankees.
That's called peaking, yeah. Peaking too early. You know, that's 2011 Red Sox, I feel like. But, well, yeah.
We peaked.
Actually, they had a shitty April, but. I want to play a game with you guys real quick.
Okay.
It's basically, I'm going to name a team for you, and I want you to tell me if they have a better or worse record than the Red Sox.
Okay.
Okay. And better. I'm going to stay out of the AL East because you guys will know that and stuff. Okay.
Better.
Okay.
Better.
So I'm going to start. Texas Rangers.
Oh, better or worse? Or worse? I'm worse. Saying worse because, yeah, please worse.
Oh. Worst?
You guys are right. It's worse. They're 48 and 60. The Red Sox are 54 and 56.
You scared me for a second there. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Chicago White Sox, better or worse?
It's really close. I think better.
Worse?
One game.
I'll go better or tied.
Yeah.
I can see Ed slightly one better. Of those.
They're above 500. They're two games above 500, 55 and 53 to the Red Sox, two games below 500.
I saw they were at 500 like 4 days ago. So,
yeah. Okay. So let's move to the National League now. Let's go Miami Marlins. Better or worse than the Red Sox?
I believe they're worse.
Worst? I have no idea.
Yeah, they're worse.
I was gonna say okay. Better.
They've had a few series against the Braves and Mets lately, so I'm like, that's probably worse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
They're in that same division, yeah.
I feel bad that Andrew's stuck there.
Mm-hmm. San Francisco Giants.
Oh, fuck.
Oh.
Worse.
Worse.
Same.
Brandon's the closest on this. They're not exactly the same, but they are both two games under 500. The Giants are 53 and 55, and the Red Sox are 54 and 56. So it's actually an interesting comparison, them and the Giants, because the Giants are also, if we're going for the last 20 years, the next most successful team in baseball. And they're having a similar year where they have been underperforming. They were indecisive at the deadline and did a little bit of buying and a little bit of selling. That's who the Red Sox are right now. They're basically the San Francisco Giants of the American League.
It's insane that they didn't trade Rodon. Like, what the fuck were they doing? What were they smoking at the trade deadline?
Same could be said for some of the moves that the Boston Red Sox made as well. But
no, the Red Sox were right to do nothing substantial. This team stinks. Like, they shouldn't have bought. If anything, they should have sold harder.
Like, I just don't think they would have gotten that much for JD or Eovaldi. I really don't.
Like, yeah, I think they think the compensation for qualifying him is going to be similar to whatever they could have gotten in a trade.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at what they've got. True. Yeah, no, it's completely true. I think that with Vasquez, it was just an offer they couldn't refuse. Because watching Valdez play at AAA, I have no idea what the hell position he's going to play. Dude can hit. Dude hit two straight up opposite field bombs this week. Good approach. They're already batting him third in the lineup. He can hit. It's just a question of where they're going to be able to put him.
Okay.
Let's see. It's got him listed second base, third base, and outfield.
Yeah, how many prospects in the Red Sox system are listed second base and third base? Like, what, half the system?
A lot, yeah.
I
mean, we've talked about it before. Like, when it comes to drafting and all that stuff, you draft the best player and then figure it out from there. So it makes sense that we have a lot of infielders because traditionally your infielders are your best athletes. And those are the guys that you want to stack your farm with and then try to make them into outfielders. Look at Mookie Betts. I think that was a pretty successful transition.
Well, I mean, like just in the big leagues, like when Tatis got injured, they're like, oh, just play center field or right field here for a little bit because you're talented enough that you can do it. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's not always true that when you look at Jarren Duran moving from second base to center field, but that's the difference between like, you know, a Mookie Betts or a Fernando Tatis, Jarren Duran, where there's enough talent, you know, they'll find a way to be on the field.
Yep. Talent plays. Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming series, which it's kind of weird. We got two games against the Braves, and then one game against Baltimore, and then we move into a weekend series with the Yankees. So as Brad pointed out in our text group, if we somehow, some way can beat the Orioles on, what is it, Thursday night, it'll be officially the first series that the Red Sox have won against an American League East team this season.
There are people who wanted to like the Red Sox to buy at the deadline, and they haven't even beaten an AL East team this year, like in a series. Or it's just unreal. How's it like? You'd think just by sheer dumb luck, you'd win one. Genuinely,
it's been absolutely terrible, and the injuries have not helped.
God, try to think of like all the synonyms for like just bad, the cataclysmic, shambolic. That's a good one.
Shambolic.
Yeah, is that shambolic. A word? Yes, it is. Look it up.
Hey, look at this nerd knowing words.
It just means like in disarray.
Sounds made up.
Bad. They stink.
They do stink. It's been...
the probable starters. Jesus Christ. Man.
Well, we've got a comment coming in from DarkSage9117 over on Twitter. He clarified that he is a Yankees fan, but he feels sorry for Red Sox fans this year. But he also said that Chaim Bloom is a clown, in his opinion. How do you guys feel about that?
First of all, don't patronize me with your pity, because I would not share the same for you and your Yankees. Please at least have that respect for us where you could just laugh at us. Please and thank you. Second, this wasn't an all-in year for Bloom and his five-year plan. So I'll go harsher on the team and him next year if by next year the team isn't a serious contender to try to win a championship. That's where I'll be mad.
Yeah, I think next year is where we really start to see the reckoning one way or the other. I think this offseason, basically, they just got too cute. Overperformed last year in 2021, made it to the ALCS, kind of on fumes when they got there, and then they got hot. But what the problem with this year, it wasn't so much, and I feel like I'm just going to be repeating myself a lot with this. It hasn't been the moves that were made. It's been the moves that weren't made. I don't think that trading Hunter Renfroe for Bradley and the two prospects is a bad move. I think that not getting a sufficient backup for him is the bad move. And I don't know. Obviously, there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know. But to say that they couldn't have just tossed $7 million to Tommy Pham and be like, hey, play outfield for us this year instead of trading for him at the deadline. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Maybe I think everybody expected Bradley to hit a little bit better than he's been hitting. I think that everybody's expected most of the lineup to hit better than they've been hitting. I mean, Kike Hernandez didn't really carry his weight for the most part. They haven't had anybody carry their weight at first base. Now they've got Hosmer for that. You know, I think that the Cassis injury certainly played into that. I think that eight walk-off wins, whatever.
Yep, that was the eighth last night.
Yeah, I mean, some of that's bad luck. Some of that's just, you know, it's just the way this team's been this year.
Also, injury luck, you regress to the mean. Last year, the Red Sox were one of the healthiest teams in baseball. Like, most of their core players didn't miss any time. I think, Xander had a stint where maybe he missed a week. Or like, because I think he hurt his wrist, I think, off the top of my head last year. And we rave a lot.
Yeah,
we rave a lot about the last year's team, but also, we got to remember, last year's team, the second half of the season was some of the most uninspired, boring piece of shit baseball I've seen in a while. Like that, they were sleepwalking into the playoffs last year, and it was like insane, like how far they went.
They kind of wake up in the last two games against the Nets.
Yeah, exactly. And like going into the All-Star break, as everyone has that saying, like, okay, well, you know, if by the All-Star break you're this many games above 500, you can just play 500 baseball the rest of the way and you'll coast in. The Red Sox literally did that. They took it to that extreme to where, like, at a certain point after the All-Star break, they're like, we could play 500 baseball and still make the playoffs. And it's exactly what they did. They played 500 baseball the rest of the way through the season.
Yeah, just narrowly snuck in. I feel like It's just the order got messed up. I think that if they were, if the Red Sox were having a season like this in 2021 after 2020, it would be a lot less frustrating. But yes, having this season now, after making the ALCS last year, and I think we all know that that was a fluky ALCS for the reasons that you just brought up. That was why that team was so great, was because they did overperform. You know, I think we'd feel a lot better about it, though, if, you know, they were playing like this after a shitty year the year previously. But, you know, it is what it is, and next year is going to be the really, you know, we'll know at least what's happening with Xander. Hopefully we'll know what's happening with Rafi Devers, and we'll have a better idea of the direction the team's going in. That's the other part of the problem now. They're really, the direction is a little bit of a mystery.
And I think that goes into what Dark Sage is saying in the comments about the ownership group. Some years acting like they're a poverty franchise, and some years acting like they want to push the chips all in to win. With the Bogarts and Devers decision looming, that is a time when they need to push those chips in and really commit to winning with this core of this team.
Which they will. Yeah. At least with Devers, they will. It's, dude, like, I'm sorry. Like, I think people are getting themselves way too worked up over Devers. Like, dude, he's not going anywhere. He's simply not going anywhere. Every extension decision or move this team has made like at least logical sense. For like the logical standpoint, there's not a single reason in the entire planet to not extend Rafael Devers. I get a little nervous with Xander, but at the same time, when I think about Xander, like, dude, Carlos Correa couldn't get the big long-term contract. And in a year where Xander's power numbers are down and he's never been a good defender, does Boris really think he's going to get that mega contract? You sure?
I think they're bluffing a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could definitely could see that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Boris is going to play it out to the end, test free agency, but, like, I definitely could see Xander coming back because I just don't think that mega deal is there for him if Carlos Correa couldn't get it.
That's a good point. Correa did have to sign, like, that weird contract with the Twins where he has opt-outs, like, after every season, basically.
And Correa is younger, an elite defender, and one of the best clutch hitters in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I guess time will tell. This winter will be very interesting for the Boston Red Sox. But as we talked about earlier, football season's around the corner, so we can at least shift our focus to the New England Patriots for a little while.
Maybe you will. I'm just going to watch the
Air Mac. Let's go. I mean, you know, also you could shift to soccer season, which is in full swing. I watched Liverpool be very disappointing and draw against Fulham, which was not great. Got up at 6.
Could you do like a soccer podcast but the gimmick is that you speak in this fake British accent the entire time?
Oh my, that would be really funny.
Please.
Wear like a monocle while you're talking about it.
Huito's cringing because I'm calling it soccer. I'm sorry. It's just what we do here. For some reason, we called the sport where you barely ever use your feet football. So we got to cancel out the other sport where everyone else uses their brain and calls it football because it's what it should be called.
What would you call American football if not football? I'd call it murder ball personally, but that was already
taken. Yeah, that's more accurate. It's much more accurate.
American style rugby. I'm going to throw this.
It's true.
I'm going to throw this comment up on the screen just because I think it's an honest take. Dark Sage said, let me also say this. I do not think that the New York Yankees are going to win this year. If they play the Dodgers, they are losing in 7 games. It might be harder to get through the
World Series. Yeah.
Yeah,
as I said, the Astros are so insane right now.
Even if they get to face the Blue Jays in the ALDS, I think they'll have a hard time with that.
I think they could beat the Blue Jays. I think they're a little stronger than them just because of like the depth of the bullpen. The Yankees still do have a really good bullpen.
Yankees are good.
Pissed off Aaron Judge is going to be him. They'll have Stanton back at that point. I just look at the front of that Astros rotation, and it's like you've got Verlander, Valdez, Urquidy, Garcia, and the Yankees have a guy that gets lit up every time the spotlight's on him.
dude, like they let Correa walk, got someone from their system who was better than him, and are having currently their best season in the regular season to date. This is their best season so far. They're on pace for it. The Astros are just a unreal organization. Like, genuinely kudos to them. If their owner wasn't a miserly piece of garbage, like, they'd be, like, without a doubt, like, a World Series winner, like, every year. And
Astros are going to be tough.
Yeah, and like what Dark Sage said, like a lot of Yankees fans are having the sentiment they're going to get negative about their team right now because the chinks in the armor are showing. And I totally get it because, like, you see the Dodgers and the Astros, and for some reason they traded James Montgomery. Like, why did they do that?
Yeah, what was that about?
And Harrison Bader, he's got that broken foot or plantar fasciitis or whatever it is.
Pretty much just traded for Aaron Hicks again. Like, you now have two Aaron Hickses on the team. Why?
That was a wild move. And I've got a buddy who's a big time Cardinals fan, and he was texting me and he was pissed off about it because he's a big Harrison Bader guy. And I was like, dude, you guys won that trade because Jordan Montgomery is legit. And then Montgomery
9 ERA this year, like, he's a legit, yeah, you know, a rotation piece. Like, he's no bum.
And Montgomery pitched against the Yankees the other day, and I texted him. I'm like, so how do you feel about Monty? He's like, pretty good so far.
The only thing with Bader to the Yankees, he's from New York City, so that's like a nice story. But it's also like you already have that skill set. So what's the point, man?
I mean, I get the point of like trying to bring in a solid center fielder so that Judge doesn't have to play center field, because I'm sure the Yankees ownership group and everyone just cringes every time he lays out for a ball in center field, because, you know, they're just expecting he's going to come up hurt. And I get that. Protect that investment, especially if they're going to invest long term in him. But it just didn't make sense at the deadline.
Yeah, yeah, it screams of the vibes they're trying to get Lopez from the Marlins, and that reportedly, you know, got yanked out from under them last second. It was like an ownership veto. They're like, no, we're not going to trade him. We're going to keep him for the future. It seems like that's what happened, but the Yankees won't admit that because it makes them look like really dumb. Like, you get rid of James Montgomery, and like, you can never have enough pitching come playoff time. Like, it's just a baffling move. It just really makes no sense. Like a rare, like, Cashman head scratcher. Because usually he's pretty good with his trades and just his overall moves.
Yeah. All right. Dark Sage says he has one other question for us. So we'll wait for that question to roll through, and then we'll hop off here for the night. Do you guys have anything else you want to throw into this episode or talk about while we're waiting on that question?
I would love to. In overall baseball news, Jacob DeGrom made his first home start of the season back, and the dude is an alien. Dude was pumping 102 in the first inning. He had five perfect innings and like gave up two runs in the end of the fifth. Sorry, he had I think he ended his day at 5 1/3, two earned. The dude's like just so clearly better than every other pitcher, like, that it's kind of scary. It's no one touches him like when he's healthy. It's unreal. The dude's like throwing 93 mile per hour changeups for funsies. One of the most unhittable sliders in the game. And again, he pumps 102 casually. It's just what he does. Watching Jacob DeGrom is just a treat for anyone in baseball, like, if you love the game.
You know, also, Jacob DeGrom, noted shortstop in college.
Yeah, noted. He sure was.
So that just goes into what we were talking about before. You can convert these good, solid athletes into anything. Now he's an alien pitcher who's won Cy Youngs and throws 102 for his first pitch back. It's wild.
No one lost in the playoffs. No one.
I'm just imagining. Hugo.
I was going to say, I still think we could have kept JBJ and make him a closer.
Yes. Exactly, I agree, 100%.
Good team. He looked better than Hernandez on the mound.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Other than that, Juan Soto tied Ted Williams for the most walks for a player 24 or younger. So yeah, when people
we were
say,
talking about that before the show, and my dog just started swearing at Juan Soto. It was weird.
Very bizarre. You know, Penny really needs to chill.
Yeah, I didn't get it. It just seemed unnecessary.
Sapphire understood the assignment. She's been very chill. She's been sleeping.
Let's see. Dark Sage's question was actually a football question. He's a Bears fan. He noted that.
Oh,
yes,
I'm sorry
they suck
for you, man.
However, he wants Mac Jones to succeed in New England. And his question is basically saying that with the short leash that they give young quarterbacks these days, is he doomed to fail in New England following after Tom Brady? Basically, a lot of fans compare the two, which is unfair, in my opinion, to compare those two guys because they're two completely different quarterbacks. Tom Brady was a guy that kind of succeeded when he shouldn't have succeeded. A sixth-round pick, you know, it's well-documented. He was basically a slob coming out of Michigan that turned into a polished diamond under the tutelage of Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. Mac Jones, I think, is more polished coming into the NFL than Brady ever was. And I think he's going to do fine. I think this year he's going to take tremendous strides in that system, and he's going to leave a lot of people with their jaws wide open.
I think he's going to be a lot better. I mean, he's going to be working in spite of probably the worst offensive coaching staff in the entire league. That's not hyperbole. You have fucking bumbling Matt Patricia and Joe Judge back there. Two of the most spectacular failures as head coaches in the league in recent memory. Like, genuinely bumbling buffoons who never have coached an offensive staff. So, when Max succeeds, it'll be in spite of the coaching he has around him. And also with a mediocre cast of weapons. So, I'm looking forward to seeing him because, at the end of the day, if you're a franchise quarterback, it genuinely doesn't matter what you have around you. You'll still elevate. So, we'll see what he has. I believe in him. I think he's got the tools to succeed, and I think he has made a step forward. But
watch for Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry to be a big piece of this offense this season.
Yeah, Jonnu really needs to be better this year. Go ahead, Ed.
He sure does.
I'm just really confused. Why are we talking about like an 18th round draft pick from the 1995 Expos that never even played in the majors? I'm really lost right now, guys. What the fuck are we talking about?
Well, yeah, you know, Tom Brady, he was a celebrated draft pick by the Expos. You know, that's now a no longer team. So we have to bring up some of their classic Hall of Fame draft picks every now and then.
Yeah, I get
baseball
it.
Baseball was robbed of the greatest catcher who ever lived because he decided to go play football. That's really what I'm hearing here.
Basically, yeah.
It's
all right, guys. It's been fun, but let's go ahead and call it a night. We got to get off here and do some other things with our lives. And we will be back later this week after the – we're not coming back after the Braves series. We're coming after that one game against the Orioles and kind of cover all of that at one. No need to do an entire episode for one game of Orioles. So we're going to combine the two on Thursday night. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll be back here, and then we'll be ready for the Yankees this weekend. So Dark Sage, we'll see you this weekend, buddy. And thanks for watching and commenting along. It's been a lot of fun. See you guys later.
Hogtail 2024.
See you.
Thanks for watching. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Pesky Report. Make sure to like, subscribe, and leave a review.
Thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name, and we're still here.